This is a podcast from the British Council's Going Global 2013.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this session on university rankings. My name is Colin Reardon. I'm the President and Vice-Chancellor of Cardiff University in the United Kingdom, and I'm also the Chair of the UK Higher Education International Unit. Now, we're going to have, of course, our three presenters in a moment. We've already had this morning the launch of the Times Higher Education ranking, so we're going to be hearing directly from Phil Beatty on that in a moment. And I see from a well-attended audience that this is clearly a matter of some interest. It's not only, I think, a matter of interest to individual universities, but it's also a question of some controversy, certainly in Europe, over the question of whether there should be, as it were, an official version of rankings rather than the circumstances we have at the moment, where rankings are done, as it were, by independent organisations, very often newspapers or, as in this case, the Times Higher Education magazine. So I think what we'll do is I'll just briefly say a word about each of our contributors and then ask them to come up in turn to say their piece, which is 10 minutes each. For one reason or another, the session's scheduled to end at 3:45, but I'd like to end at 3:40 for one reason or another. I hope nobody minds that, and I'm going to be quite strict about that, so whoever's speaking at that point will have to stop and we'll finish. So we have Phil Beatty, who's the editor of the Times Higher Education Rankings. The THE has been doing rankings since 2004. In 2009, Phil, as it were, reinvented the whole system and relaunched the Times Higher Rankings with another provider in competition with their previous one, which is an interesting process which he might tell us something about, with a complete rethink of the methodology. And that was a process that I do remember because it involved consulting stakeholders such as universities. So Phil is absolutely key to all of this. We have Alan Goodman of the Institute of International Education, which has been in existence, I gather, for almost 100 years, which is a tremendous achievement. He's the sixth president of the Institute, having previously been Executive Dean of the School of Foreign Service and a professor at Georgetown University. He's been president of the Institute now for 12 years. And in a change to the original advertised programme, we have Phil Quirk now, who's currently the Director of Academic Affairs at the Higher Colleges of Technology here in the UAE. And from 2000 to 2006, he was Dean of General Education, Business and Applied Communications at Abu Dhabi Men's College, having moved from the women's campus where he was Chair of English. So that completes our panel. And I'm now going to ask, we're going to take our speakers in the order in which they sit. So I'm going to ask Phil to come up to the podium and give his presentation. Thank you, Phil. Phil Beatty.
Thanks. Good afternoon, everybody. Just make sure I've got my slides here. This morning we launched the Times Higher Education World Reputation Rankings. That's a purely subjective ranking. It's the top 100 universities in the world. It's only 0.5% of the higher education landscape globally. And it's purely based on subjective opinion. But I think we're probably better known, as Colin pointed out, for the annual World University Rankings, really the main event. We rank 400 institutions. We published that in October 2012. It was a huge undertaking. We looked at 50 million citations to 6 million research papers published over 5 years. We've collected around about 100,000 data points on several hundred institutions. It's an incredibly solid piece of work, and we look at all core missions of a university. I'm obviously very proud of that activity, and I'm satisfied that we're doing a rigorous, comprehensive ranking that has a real valuable role to play in higher education. And even though these sorts of rankings tend to highlight the achievements of the traditional elites in the US and in the UK, I think we are seeing evidence of the emergence of new higher education powers, and certainly a dynamic, changing global picture. So I believe the rankings can play a really helpful role, including in this region, in the Middle East and North Africa. They can help emerging institutions gain the visibility and forge new relationships with people. They help in globalization. But I think to be helpful, rankings really have to be better understood. We have to be very frank about the methodologies, and those of us who rank have to be honest about the limitations as well. So it's important that those of us who rank are responsible. A quick word about me. As Colin said, I'm the editor of the Times Higher Rankings. This is a rather strange cartoon that was done of me at the OECD's conference in Paris, the Institutional Management Higher Education. I use this slide for two main reasons. One is it points out that I was nominated as the 14th most influential person in Australian higher education by the Australian newspaper, which is a slightly crazy list. I was above Einstein and just below the Prime Minister. It does also point out I think I'm fifth in my own household, if you include the cat. I'm not very influential in my own world. But it was about the power of rankings. You know, rankings have become so dominant in setting the agenda globally for institutions. But also I use the slide because it says I'm a franco ranker. I really want to adhere to that role of being more honest and open about rankings. This is Times Higher Education magazine. We've been around for 40 years. We have a pedigree of providing trusted information to the university community, and it's important for us to live up to that. And we're aware of the fact that composite ranking scores are inherently crude. You know, you can't reduce all the wonderful activity universities do to a single number, which does beg the question, why we rank at all? Well, I don't need to tell this audience about how quickly things are changing in higher education. We have a move globally to a mass HE system. We've just heard from British Council this morning new research about how essential intercultural skills are to employers. And even if we see expansion in domestic numbers, you know, heading into the hundreds of, you know, 262 million, I think the prediction is, for 2025, these systems, these national systems, they need international benchmarks. They need clear international data definitions. We think rankings play a helpful role there. Also, we're seeing shifting student recruitment markets. There was a report out today by the Dubai International Academic City that the UAE has been named as one of the top five education destinations behind the US, UK and Canada for international students. UAE is becoming a global hub for education. But I think, again, it's important that we track shifting sands, changing dynamics of higher education. And there is evidence to suggest that rankings promote collaboration. They promote best practice sharing. In particular, I think the line here, which is from the U.S. Institute of Higher Education Policy, stresses the role rankings can play in fostering collaboration and in helping institutions look beyond national conversations to global conversations, and that's why we're all here. Of course, they're influencing student decision-making. This was a survey by IDP, which highlights that the reputation and the ranking position of institution was the single most significant factor the students who are internationally mobile named when making a study choice decision. And they're not just influencing student choice, as the Australian newspaper acknowledged in nominating me as being so influential. They're being used by faculty to help make career decisions. They're used by university leaders to set strategic priorities. There's a picture there just poking into the scene as Colin Reardon, who's, you know, got clear ambitions for Cardiff University, wants to drive Cardiff into the world top 100. It's led by the government. Rankings shouldn't be dictating that policy, but they could certainly help inform that policy and benchmark performance. So I think this is great. You know, we're proud that the rankings are used in this kind of way. We think it's important that they're helping shape debates, they're helping influence policy. But it's very important for us, and it's a really big but, that we don't think rankings should actually drive the policies. We think they should help inform the policies but not drive the policies. And I think there's a really important point to say that it's the tail wagging the dog. You know, the dog should wag the tail and not the other way around. So rankings, we've got to know how they work. We've got to take from them what's valuable, but not let them dictate too much. So Times Higher Education rankings, it's important to point out, we're using a set of criteria to judge a particular type of institution. I don't think we should judge all institutions against the same criteria, against the same benchmarks. Mission diversity is a great strength in the sector, but Times Higher Education is looking at world-class research universities, institutions which have ambitions to be global, to publish globally renowned research. There's no one-size-fits-all, but we're looking at this particular thing. And in this basis, we have a comprehensive system that looks across different missions of all global institutions: teaching, knowledge transfer, global outlook, and research. It was easy for us to establish that is what we wanted to look at, but much more difficult to work out how to use that information, how to actually measure and benchmark that. So we had an international survey carried out by our partners, Thomson Reuters. We asked the sector, what do you want? How do you use rankings? What metrics would you like to see? We had some very clear feedback about the use of faculty output through citations, monitoring of faculty impact through publication citations analysis. They were interested in staff-student ratios. They're interested in the reputational measures that we published this morning. So we're listening and learning. We took the information to an expert advisory group. We had more than 50 people involved giving us our feedback from all over the world, and we developed a quite clear, comprehensive system. In a nutshell, this is what we do. We have 13 separate performance indicators. There's not enough time today to talk in detail about the indicators, just to say we have a range of different indicators across the range of activities. 30% is dedicated to what we describe as the teaching environment, but research does dominate. It is a research-intensive university ranking. But the point I'd like to make today really is that the rankings data can and should be disaggregated. We should unpick it. We should get beneath it. So it's important for us. We can do all sorts of useful things with it. We can create sort of geopolitical indicators, just literally mapping the landscape. We can map rankings data against GDP spending. We can look at movement over time. So on the sort of geopolitical scale, I think the composite score is entirely valid, completely worthwhile. But at an individual level, I think it's where we should start drilling down. So one of the things we've done is put a lot of the data on our website for free. It's important for us to stress that every university has a profile. You can unpick the composite score. We can provide data on the five broad areas of activity. Really important for me, you can rank against the five different areas. So you can create a global teaching ranking, you can create a global citation impact ranking, you can create an international outlook ranking. And I think it's really important. It helps to unpick the mysteries and magic around rankings and makes them more accountable, makes them more user-friendly. Very important for me is the iPhone app. There's a picture there of one of the profiles on the iPhone. But very significantly, what we do, and this is a free app, it's not a commercial product, it's a free app, we allow you to create your own bespoke ranking. We've consulted widely, thought long and hard about the different balance of the indicators, the different weightings, but we recognize you may disagree, you may have different priorities. So we have a user-driven approach with this free iPhone app. But the other thing I think this does, which is very important, is it holds us to account. It demonstrates quite clearly to the user how much decisions around the weightings given to different indicators can actually change the ranking positions of institutions quite dramatically. So it helps students understand that rankings can be inherently different depending on the choices the compilers make. And I think that's really important, that there's no such thing as a correct ranking. They're all subjected to the subjective views of the compilers about which factors are important and which ones aren't. We consulted widely. We think we've produced a very sensible balance, but we do let you unpick that, and I think that's really important. Very briefly, to point out, with our partnership with Thomson Reuters, you can unpick this data even deeper. Anyone who participates in the ranking can get free profiles based on their performance against world averages. It's crucial for me to say, even if you feel that you have no chance of being in the top 400 list, that you won't be visible in the ranking at this stage, it's important to share the data, to share the experience, because once we've collected the data against globally recognized data standards, data definitions, and benchmarks, we can start looking at individual performance, and it helps institutions in this region to internationalize, to compare themselves correctly against global benchmarks. So this is a profile of national institutions, and once you're in the project, you can dig much deeper. And I think just to sum up, because my time's up, it was the point I'd like to sort of leave you with is a quote from W. Edwards Deming in the US. In God we trust, all others bring data. That's what we're here for. We're here to help you better understand the world that we're in and the changing dynamics of the world. So thank you very much for your time, and I'll hand over to the next speaker. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil, and a timely reminder that rankings are subjective, but nevertheless, many of us do orientate our university performance around them, so that's something we can discuss later. So I'll now ask Phil Quirk to come up for perhaps a regional view of the issue.
Phil, thank you. Phil started off with, he's a ranker. I'm not a ranker. I'm an institution who's obviously very interested in the work you do, but also a consumer, because our children, when we send them across to the UK and been abroad for 25 years, you think, where do you look first? You look at the some of the work Phil's doing. 10 minutes, and you guys can't see it, but we have this enormous stopwatch in front of us. It's quite frightening. I've just seen with Phil it flashes red when you go over the 10 minutes. So in this short 10 minutes, I'd just like to do quickly touch on an international scope, because it all impacts on us in here in the UAE. One of the great things about working here in the Emirates is the world comes here. I think we're 164 nationalities living together here, and the world touches us every day. So I'd just like to build a little on what Phil said, possibly take a little bit of Alan's thunder, because I'd like to thank them for the work they've done before going down into the UAE and finally finishing off with the HCT and what the rankings mean to us. There's two reports that I was looking at recently which I know have impacted us internationally. One is from the Global University Network for Innovation report, where it mentions that higher education has grown exponentially with increased concern worldwide about ensuring the quality of higher education. Widespread consensus that one of the most important quality assurance methods in higher education is accreditation. So reason I mention this is because in the Higher College of Technology, we have always believed since the days we opened our doors that you internationally accredit your programs, you internationally benchmark and accredit your programs, individual programs, that will naturally impact eventually on your rankings. So it's accreditation that we focus on. It was nice to see international reports saying the same thing. The UNESCO 2009 report, Trends in Global Higher Education, says that these ranking systems are widely used and influential and show no signs of disappearing, even though many have methodological problems. One of the reasons I'd like to praise Phil and his team is the fact that you can drill down. You can really see what the different methodologies they've used are. You can feel you have input in as well, and that's what I think separates the Times Higher Ed work and also the work that's been done by IEE. It tries to involve us, and as institutions, that's immensely important. So again, thank you to both for the work you've done in there. Moving on regionally, I have to thank Alan for the work IAE have done. I think it's going to make an immense difference in the MENA region. We've already seen some of the collaboration that's come out of the work you've done through the region. And I'd like to mention Raika Bandari and Adnan Elamin. I don't know if you recognize those names, but they're two of the ones who I think have published most based on the MENA report. And it does make a difference to us in the region. It does feel we're getting a voice. The World Bank, in a report that is far too recent, said the Arab world has managed to close the education gender gap and halve the literacy gap by almost 50% in recent years. But educational quality assurance, accountability, national standards, teacher licensing, and student-centered teaching learning remains below other nations of comparable economic development. I believe that the work we do in the higher colleges, in the sister institutions, through the Ministry of Higher Education, through work in the MENA region like that, we are changing that. And we're looking at institutional accreditation, looking at program accreditation, and building the name for ourselves in that way. The Global University Network for Innovation 2007 report concludes, the need to collaborate with institutions in the MENA region is essential, with the rapidly growing number of institutions preparing educators, both public and private private stakeholders and decision makers are being pressed to plan simultaneously for improved quality and expanded quantity of higher education. Phil just mentioned fifth highest number of international students here in the UAE. Nobody can do that alone. I'm a huge believer. Education is about collaboration. Yeah? We like to stand there sometimes and believe it's competition. We're not a football teams. If we work together, we work better. And I certainly believe in a market like the UAE, there's enough room for everybody and to ensure that we all work together on the quality of the education we provide our students. And that's really where I think Sheikh Nayan started off this morning. And he said, number one most important thing for anybody in this room, anybody, is the quality of the student experience. I really don't care if we're ranked 1,000 or 1. If we are not relating to the students and the quality of their learning experience, we're getting something wrong. So as long as we keep the student at the center of everything we do, we must be getting something right. In the UAE, I think we've seen three, I think, influential reports that have impacted upon us fairly recently. The World Economic Forum's Global Competitiveness Report from last year had as its fifth pillar the higher education and training, and noted that quality higher education and training is crucial to nurture pools of well-educated workers who are able to adapt rapidly to their changing environment. This pillar measures secondary and tertiary enrollment rates as well as the quality of education, and this for me was very interesting, as evaluated by the business community. And included the extent of staff training is also taken into consideration because of the importance of vocational and continuous on-the-job training. In this ranking, the UAE was ranked, I think, higher than it has been in any other international ranking. And I believe that is because of those two methodological traits, looking at on-the-job training and looking at the feedback from employers. One thing I think we do very well here is we talk. We are well connected to the community. The community is involved in our curriculum development. Our employers work with us. And that results, I believe, in satisfied employers at the end. Yeah? So along with the student, always keeping the student at the center, if we involve the employers, the employability of students at the end, and linking higher education with future career paths, that, I believe, prepares our students best for the future. The second document I'd like to refer to is the UAE Government Strategy 2011 to 2030, and it states as one of its key strategies, improve the quality of higher education and ensure accessibility by defining, coordinating the roles of public universities, enhancing higher education curricula and teaching methods focused on empirical research, accreditation, monitoring of public and private university to global standards, encouraging university outreach programs, diversifying sources of funding for public higher education institutions, and enhancing the effectiveness of Emirati student scholarship programs. The focus again there on accreditation is the part that has impacted us, I think, from day one, since the higher colleges opened the doors. I know it affects my sister universities of UAU and ZU in the same way. And again, it has, I think, always been key to the success of higher education in the UAE, this focus on international quality education. The final one I'm going to mention is the Bertelsmann's Transformation Index, the BTI UAE Country Report, which praised the UAE mission to ensure that accreditation standards are being maintained and that teacher qualification standards are being improved. They highlighted three weaknesses in the secondary school graduates' week's language and math skills, which I think all our university partners in the region are aware of, and which is, I think, ensured that we worked closer and closer in the last few years with the Ministry of Education, ADEC, the Dubai Education Zone, and ensured that that gap is narrowing, and certainly more in the last 3 years than probably in the last 20 that I've been here. Second, the lack of focus on funding and research, and again, we've seen that increasingly in our universities, how the research focus and development has been pushed forward. And thirdly, the preference for English language instruction over local Arabic and the detrimental impact on the issues of national identity. This has seen us all sit up, take notice, and introduce more in the way of Arabic language instruction within our courses, quite correctly. So for me, the higher college is a technology, and I think for almost all of us here in the UAE, the focus is, number one, the student. Focus on the student. Second, focus on the community and our employers, industry, and how we can help them to improve. And thirdly, trying to guarantee our quality through international program accreditation, believing that if we focus on the international program accreditation, the rankings will follow. And I've just been told I have 6 seconds left, so I will leave it like that before I hand over. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Phil, and a very timely reminder at the end there that you've got to concentrate on the basics, and if you do, the rankings will follow, which I do firmly believe. So I'll now ask Alan, who's going to talk about the Institute's report on this region, on Middle East and North Africa.
What's really frightening about being up here is not the time stopwatch, but the other screen has a picture of me giving this lecture. I wish I had a PowerPoint, but I don't, so I only have me to look at. I'm traveling with a couple of our colleagues from the Institute, Daniel Obst, who is head of our International Partnership Program. He'll be making a presentation tomorrow afternoon on the partnership activity. We've just returned from a visit to Myanmar. And Mark Lazar is in charge of our global scholarship program. He leads the project with NYU Abu Dhabi and the Education USA Advising Centers. And Mark is here if you have questions about that project. And Nikki Levinson won a staff award to actually come to this conference. She's our expert in social media and going on from here to Cairo. We're also very grateful at the Institute for both of the Phillips that preceded me. They are very thoughtful in what they do. Rankings are designed to promote transparency, but not all rankers are transparent about the process by which they do the rankings, and I'm really struck with Phil's effort at the Times to make it possible for everyone